Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Tech Magic, the podcast where we talk about everything happening in innovation, gaming, anything in technology, AI, of course, and you name it, spatial computing as well. I am your host, Kathy Hackle. I am back from being in Davos during the World Economic Forum's meeting, and I am thrilled to be joined by my guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, how are you?
I'm great. Today, we're great.
Amazing.
Yeah, while you were at Davos, like the entire Pacific Northwest was under like a layer of ice. We've had this was a traumatic week, honestly, out here. I'm just glad to have power, to be totally honest.
Well, it was actually, hats off to you and Lily, our producer, because I listened to the episode and I had so much fun. And I'm like, wow, you're like, the weather sounds dreadful. I mean, I was in the Swiss Alps, but it was beautiful. I have to do so pretty. It was so pretty.
It was just like the land of the slip and slide. I hated the last week. It was just horrible. We had people at the house because like their power went out and somehow we kept ours. It was like, I don't know why it's not all over the news. We just got obliterated out here, but I kept my internet and we kept our power. So I kept my sanity to some extent. I'm just glad that it's over. Yeah.
Well, at least you had internet. Like, so, I was in Davos, right? I was at DLD, which was a fantastic conference. And we're going to share a link to my talk on spatial computing and AI wearables.
Yes.
They're DLD hands down. Anyone listen to this? And I think we should have Steffi Cerny. The main person at DLD come and join us and talk about their events. Amazing. Super amazing event in Munich every January. Highly recommend to everyone. So I was there. Then went over to Davos with the DLD delegation. I ended up staying in an Airbnb near Davos Platz, so very close to all the activity. You know, tiny little apartment. They were charging a lot of money per night. That's okay. But no Wi-Fi. No Wi-Fi. Like, I didn't even, you know, like, I check in and I'm there and I'm like, message the host and I'm like, hey, you know, how do I log into the Wi-Fi? He's like, oh, we don't have any Wi-Fi. I'm like, what? Like, how does this even happen? So I don't know.
I kind of feel like if your spot is online, your spot should be online, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you can find the rental online, that's kind of a given.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So
I did have it happen once, but it was like in a remote cabin way in like the mountains of Seattle, near the ice caves. And I was just like, yeah, I'm surprised they even have electricity out here. So like I went, I get it at some particular level, but yeah,
if you're in a cabin and you're trying to disconnect and do digital detox, that's to be expected. Like, that's fine. But I'm literally like, how am I in this like very expensive Airbnb in the middle of this really important meeting and I have no Wi-Fi? So yeah, a little traumatized from that experience, but you know, overall great experience going back to Davos. Last year I was part of the official program, so it was like very different than this year. This year I went more kind of on the sidelines. And I went very last minute, so it wasn't like I had a lot of like speaking or anything. It was where I ended up having tons of meetings. And this is what I'll report back, because I told everyone that I was going to report back.
What's the takeaways here?
Takeaways. I mean, definitely, I think geopolitically, there's a lot of instability, like just a lot of questions geopolitically across everything that's happening. A lot of conversations around artificial intelligence. Like I mentioned, it was like everywhere. But well, I do feel.
Let's back up for a second. When you say like geopolitically, what do you mean by that? You're
yeah.
We're in the
I mean,
U.S.
the conflict the in the Middle East, questions around all the elections that are happening. Mm-hmm. The new president of Argentina was there. It was just really interesting to listen to everything that was happening, the conversations, questions around elections. There's going to be many elections this year. So there were a lot of questions mm-hmm. around election integrity, but also technology and elections. So AI, right? AI and yeah. elections, all those sorts yeah. of things that kept coming up. Lots of, it's interesting because I saw a lot of people speaking about AI, like almost every panel that I went to outside of the Congress had to do with AI. And sometimes mm-hmm. there were people that I was like, why is that person speaking about AI? Like, not that only some of us can speak about AI. I understand everyone's using ChatGPT on a big, very big portion of the business world is, right? But sometimes it was interesting, kind of like people were trying to weave in the message where it was like, the panel had nothing to do with that. So, so I don't know. That was a little bit at times a little too much, right? It felt hypey era. Like it was like the same thing with the metaverse at CES, a year ago, or everything was metaverse. Mm-hmm. It felt very similar. There was an AI house, which was fantastic. Their programming was great. Lots of great events happening there. But yeah, I feel like everything on the promenade, which is the street that all the brands take over, the companies take over, like everything was AI, the future. Like it was a little
was it positive too much. Or was it mostly positive or was it like fear mongering?
It was a mix. I think it was a mix. I think it was mm-hmm. mostly positive. I think mostly people were positive. But yeah, I mean, I think there were still questions.
They were positive. We should be afraid.
I didn't hear that much. Like they're, it's going to ruin everything. It was I heard a lot of like these valuations on, these startups are ridiculous or like, it's exaggerated, we shouldn't worry about AGI because it's too far. Or some people are like, no, AGI is around the corner. So I don't know. It wasn't really a conversation around like, AI is going to kill us all and it's an existential threat. It was more like, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing?
It's not war games yet.
Yeah, no, it wasn't like that. Yeah, it wasn't like, Terminator. Like it was more like, is this good for society or is this bad? Is this going to take jobs away or is this actually going to create jobs?
I came to a conclusion with that over the weekend because I had a lot of like downtime while we sat in the dark and thought. It's a weird argument that I hear, this is going to take away jobs. That should be a given, right? Like at some point, the realization is all technology takes away a job. It also creates jobs, right? And that I think is something that we need to just kind of accept a little bit more, right? Like even with like the invention of the car that really impacted the farrier career paths for a lot of people who were shoeing and trimming horses, right? But they became mechanics. So every time I hear someone talk about this, it kind of puts me on the side of like, well, yeah, of course technology is going to take away a job, but it's also going to create a lot of them. That's literally what technology does.
That's my hope, though. That's my hope that it does create enough jobs. Does it create enough to replace everyone that's being displaced? I don't know, because I do see, like, I don't know about you, but like, I feel like every week I'm reading about more and more layoffs in the tech space. And it keeps getting like lots of friends, like multiple friends. Like I'm starting to see that again and again and again. And, for many of us in tech used to be the sector where you felt some level of job security, right? In the longer term. And I think that is no longer the case. Right?
That's the case for everything, though. And might be a little bit of a soapbox for me, but like mm-hmm. by and large, my generation, millennials to Gen Z, which will become Gen Alpha, we have a completely different relationship with like the corporate environment, right? And it's not just technology. Like we all entered the workforce during a down economy in 2008. And we had to learn how to bring new technologies into it. I rode the wave of social media bringing into, the professional workforce. And at the end of the day, as these companies have continuing, looming, rolling layoffs, like we just have had to learn how to like cope with that. And that's not a tech thing. That's not a tech thing.
I agree. I also think some of the conversations I had also were around loyalty, right? Why should you have loyalty to a company like that? You know, that idea and that concept that our parents had of like, you stay there and you do like, no. Like to me, well, it's
our
like,
parents had pensions. I've never been offered a pension.
That's true.
I couldn't even, but like, honestly, what level if you of asked loyalty me what a pension was, I couldn't firmly break down what a pension even is, right? Like because it's basically a unicorn. I've never been offered one. I've never seen one offered one. I've never even seen one in like as an option for a job application of like, here's what our benefits hold. Like that's, it's a completely different thing. So really it's not a question of like, I think people asking, should I be loyal to a company? But it should be companies asking, why should your employees be loyal to you? What does that offer? Because if it's a competitive pay, well, it's competitive because there's everyone else is offering basically the same thing. What else for it? And if it's access to a 401k, but no match, well, that's a problem, right? Like there's just more that needs to be done. But that's not what
or I think more reality of like, yeah, you know, like this is just what I do 9 to 5 and you know, you don't deserve my loyalty or, you know, why should I be loyal to you if I know I could be fired at any moment? So there was actually really interesting intergenerational conversations around that. Met a very few Gen Z folks that were there. I mean, I'll tell you, I didn't see that much around gaming.
How could they afford to go?
Well, you know what? Last year, to be honest, last year, we've had like a group of like YouTubers that were covering the conference. I don't know if they did that this year, right? But I saw very little. I did go to an interesting panel on Gen Z and capitalism. And it was interesting because no one on the panel was Gen Z. And one of the girls in the audience was Gen Z. And she's like, you guys should have had like a Gen Z person up here. Like, right? Which I thought was really interesting. I said, very valid point. It's the first thing I thought of is like, you need to have that perspective if you're actually going to be thinking about this, right? Or talking about this.
It's like having a panel on women in tech and it's just a bunch of dudes up
just
there.
Just a bunch of
know,
dudes, like, So, yeah. So I think maybe the label of the panel was a little like, it was like a different conversation. It was like, it should have maybe been a different title. But definitely met a couple of Gen Zers that were there, had really interesting conversations with them around their perspectives around technology and creativity and work. And I got into a really good conversation with one of them about personal brand or reputation or all these, you know, branding yourself and all that. And it's interesting because she said, well, most of the like some of the Gen Zers that are my friends or some of like even like Gen Alpha, I look at some of my kids, they're going to come into these corporate jobs, quote unquote, with an audience already set up. Like they already are going to have an audience. So how is corporate America going to manage the message if these people are already going to come into the workforce with, you know, followers and people that listen to what they're saying, et cetera, right? You can't control that idea of corporate communications of controlling the message with absolutely everyone and only allowing certain people to speak, I think is going to be harder and harder as the younger generation enters the workforce. So we got into some really interesting conversations around that.
Well, as millennials take the leadership roles or even like Gen X takes the leadership roles, it's up to us to make sure that we're harboring, like we do get to change things, right? As we go into these positions, you know, and the old guard switches for the new guard, you have an opportunity to change things. I mean, the old guard brought in the internet and actually signed off on the papers to push marketing into social media. We can't just like overlook that. That was a C-suite decision by the last generation. So our generation has to make the new changes. And I think that there'll be really positive. Now what they can do to maintain a bottom line and stay a profitable company. Like, that's all part of it, but only time will tell, but it ultimately is it's becoming our responsibility to make these calls and these changes within these companies.
Well, when you and I were working together at Journey, like most of the people we had in our virtual team were Gen Zers, right? Most of them. Like, and to me it was really interesting. I remember I'm part of the Fast Company Impact Council. And we were having a conversation and I said, well, I manage mostly Gen Zers. Like it's a very different interaction that I have with them than with, you know, than with maybe if I were managing people of a different demographic. Like I said, my challenges are different, right? My challenge is like, I need to make sure I'm staying on top of everything so that I understand what, you know, how they're working, what they're working, what tools they need to work, like all these sorts of things. So, it's really interesting, really interesting perspectives, had tons of meetings. Like, you had tons and tons of meetings with, you know, governments, with top level C-suite. I think people are starting, it was very quiet in that sense, but very interested in thinking about what happens after LLMs, right? Mm-hmm. So most of the conversations that people wanted to have with me were around like, yeah, spatial computing, AI wearables, like when you start to put the, you know, the AI into these devices, into hardware. And I know mm-hmm. the episode you had with Lily was very focused on the tech gadgets and I really enjoyed it. You know, a lot of conversations around that, right? Because you and I have worked a long time in this space. You know, I've been in hardware for quite a while. And really interesting conversations I was having about that and kind of what comes next, right? What comes after the LLM or what happens when we start to think about how this goes into everything, you know, into all this hardware, et cetera.
It's funny hearing the recaps from like the AI perspective, because you hear people talk about like modal approaches to AI now and LLMs, which are large language models for those keeping score at home. And it's almost kind of funny because it's like the early days of the internet when everyone was talking about like HTML versus CSS and like how you combine the two. And it's just like, honestly, no normal person gives a crap. Like nobody cares.
like what?
At the end of the day, it's like, what can the technology combined with itself do for you? Right. That's really the bigger question that I think people like the nerds like ourselves are going to talk about, you know, how it gets there. But once we start saying, but this is what it's used for, and it becomes invisible, the how becomes not a conversation. No one talks about HTML anymore, but the entire internet still runs on this, you know, code base. It'll be interesting to see that switch. I've been very already impressed with 2024 in that matter. And watching even things like ChatGPT continue to grow. At the same time, it's growing fast, but I have a lot of dumb arguments with ChatGPT. Like real dumb, where it's like people are really afraid of like losing their jobs over this. And I get it. And at the same time, I've like really fought with ChatGPT. Yeah. I'm like, why are you doing this? I said, don't do this. I have cussed out ChatGPT before.
I don't cuss it out, but I'm always like, you can do better. Like one time I did that thing. Like I'm paying you. Like I'm not paying ChatGPT. I'm paying you to get me blah, 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 blah. And you're not doing it. Try better. Like do better. Like, so yeah, I always challenge it like that, but you know, we'll see. I never threaten it though. I don't cuss it out, and I never threaten it because if it does become a Terminator situation, I don't want it to come after me. Right. So yeah. So Lee, I don't know. You might have a target on your back. I don't know. You know, if Terminator comes.
What's new?
Well, actually, this leads me really well into the first part of what we're going to talk about today, and it's the Apple Vision Pro, right? Announcement at CES, right? They hacked the news. I love how Apple does this every time at CES. It's like they're not really there, but they're there, right? Took over the news, you know, announcing pre-order January 19th, goes on sale in the US on February 2nd, you know, all the stuff, and started talking about the apps. I mean, January 19th has come and gone. It happened on Friday, 8 a.m. I mean, I was literally on my computer. 7:50 in front of the computer. I was like, okay, just double check that the Apple Store app is updated. You know, make sure everything's set for this. You know, it was like 7:59 a.m. Eastern on January 19th. I log in and says, I will be right back. We're getting the Apple Store ready for the launch of Vision Pro, right? Minute goes by, it gets refreshed, and it's like, let's go. Off to the races. So I did the whole process. I actually recorded it, and I shared it on social. But, you know, super easy, super simple. They did the whole face scanning, et cetera.
How was that? Walk that
super through. Easy. I mean, super easy. I mean, I think many of us are not used to going through that extra step when we buy something. But since I'm a developer and I had already tried the device, like we had done something similar. So to me, it wasn't anything unusual, right? But it's just really much a face scan.
Was that face scanning, could that have been done on any device, or did you absolutely have to have like the newest iPhone?
Well, maybe not the newest iPhone, but you had to have the Apple Store updated for it to do that.
That leads to the question of like, if you didn't have an iPhone, could you still get a Vision Pro? Really?
No, I don't think you could have. You could do it on an iPad or an iPhone, because the instructions that have an iPad or an iPhone with an updated version of the Apple Store. Last update was like January 11th.
That's an interesting gate yeah. that I hadn't thought about.
You had to have that. So simple process. I grabbed the first appointment on February 2nd at the Apple Store in Pentagon Row, which is the one closest to my house here in DC. So yeah, I mean, super easy. Then I went back to buy a couple more. And then that's when it started to get pushed. Not yeah. February 2nd. It was not available anymore. It was only for delivery after February 23rd into March. And no in person.
So yeah, the first batch. Fast. Yeah, the first batch sold out. And when mm-hmm. I say first batch, I mean the first batch of the 256 gig model, mm-hmm. the 512, one yeah. terabyte. I think there's even like a terabyte model, like the really high end models. Those didn't yeah. sell out immediately. In fact, I don't think they actually ever did sell out. But the 256 yeah. sold out really quickly, which tells me a lot. Mm-hmm. That tells me kind of who might be buying it. If you read between the lines, look at the tea leaves. Yeah. You know, it seems like it's going to be a big developer tool this yes. go around, which is what it should be.
It's what we expected, right? I think it's what we expected. So
yeah, yeah. But the online speculation is that they, because of based on what they had said in the past, that about 80,000 units sold in like 15 minutes. That was that first batch of 256, which is just an exorbitant amount of money. And a wild success.
Congratulations, Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew that was going to happen. I knew it was yeah. going to sell out fast. Yeah, they were super busy. Like literally, I was trying to text with AppleCare and they're like, we're busy. We're busy. I'm like, wow, like this is crazy. I ended up buying.
They do this sale 8 a.m. on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. Cupertino's here on the West Coast. And I'm just like, good Lord, y'all. I thought you ran this through Pacific time. What are you doing here? So by the time I woke up, it was long gone. Like,
I had plenty of developer friends on the East Coast, on the West Coast that woke up at 4:55, whatever, to buy it. Like,
yeah.
Plenty of people. I ended up buying a couple for myself and for a team I'm setting up. But yeah, like that being said though, you and I have had this conversation, the developing for the Vision Pro does require a certain type of Mac, does require certain mm-hmm. things, right? It does require, if you're using Unity, it does require a certain type of license. Like, I think that there's a lot of components here on, if anyone wants to develop for this, you're going to have to work with an actual developer. Right. Not as easy as like 1, 2, 3, let's create this out of pure air, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. In many cases where a lot of like even college students in their dorm room can come up with a clever, iPhone app and send it out, this is not going to be the case.
They would have to have a lot of equipment. They got to have a lot of money. So maybe if they're in Harvard. MIT or Harvard, maybe these kids can afford all the equipment they need for this. But I would say, I did see some folks from Europe trying to buy it. Obviously, they couldn't. Or folks from Europe that were trying to buy it and send it to like one of those forwarding addresses in the U.S. Mm-hmm. that sends it, they would get a message later saying, we're not doing that. We're not sending to a forwarded address. So very interesting that they were definitely keeping it in the U.S. Very exciting. I will say, I through my LinkedIn, I did hear some things about how Apple is definitely setting up an education team. They're looking at enterprise, which I'm really excited about. I think that's a very mm-hmm. logical move. Having been an enterprise strategist at Magic Leap and worked on the enterprise side, that's definitely, the way to go for this version one. You know, it almost feels like the Oculus, the VK1 days. It almost feels like that. This is like, who's buying this thing?
So
it's interesting. When you were looking at the coverage, I saw some news coming out like a couple of days before. They were all negative of like, oh, Netflix is not going to be on it, or so-and-so is not going to be on it. I was like, who cares? Like, literally, they're all doom and gloom. Like, oh, Spotify is not going to be on it. I'm like, who cares? Like, literally, this is not about the hardware. This is about the technology this is about to unleash. And I don't know. What
honestly,
was your perspective?
Here's the perspective I've not seen. And I've not seen this printed anywhere. This is 100% Lee Keebler TM.
I can't steal it. Damn.
the stuff that I see people complaining about not being on the Vision Pro, there's an Apple alternative that needs to catch up with those competitions, right? So when you look at Netflix not being available mm-hmm. on it, you can only get to it if you're going through a web browser, so there's not on the native app, blah, 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 blah. Okay, but If I'm Apple, I'm pushing Apple TV, right? Yeah. Like that's going to be what I want to push here. If you're looking at, well, where's Spotify? Spotify's not on it. Okay, Apple well, Music. There's Apple Music. And Apple Music's not beating Spotify. So there's a lot of these service, you know, digital service provider things that aren't being properly addressed by the masses. So I kind of feel like it's a little bit by design. And maybe that's just me reading too far into it, but it is every time I see something that's like, oh, this isn't on the list, I'm like, well, yeah, because Apple's pushing out a storefront that has a competitor that they want you to go to. So like, I can see the BD part of this where it's starting to make a little bit more sense. I do think all of these apps will eventually migrate.
Oh, 100%. There will be no choice. Happen. And this is where it gets interestingly in the conversation I was having in Davos with a C-suite person. I said, look, people are so obsessed about the hardware, and I am because I'm early adopter. I'm going to buy this. Like, I'm going to use this. This is important to me, right? But it's not about the hardware. It's about the technology it kind of unleashes into the world and it enables. Mm-hmm. And this is what people are not thinking through. It's like, yes, this is Apple Vision Pro version 1. There's going to be version 2. There's going to be version 3. And there's going to be an iPhone 16 one day. And there's going to be an iPhone 17. And the more you get these devices, the more spatial capabilities they're going to have. So this is all part of an ecosystem. Apple's going to make this all into an ecosystem. So once you start to think about an iPhone 16 that has more spatial capabilities, right? Because the 15 Pro Max already does spatial video. Okay, you can shoot spatial video. Like you can't really see it, but you're going to see it in your Vision Pro. But once you think iPhone 16 or 17, whatever, like once those devices start to have more spatial capabilities, then your install base grows exponentially. And that's where brands are going to be like, oh, I get it. This is about this 3D-centric form of computing, right? Mm-hmm. That's where it gets interesting. And that's where I think a lot of people are not getting. This is, you know, this is not about developing only for the Vision Pro. It's about developing spatial content, understanding spatial data, and kind of where things are going. So, yeah. So if people are just, and it was interesting. Yeah, I'll tell you another thing, a conversation I had. And someone said, what is the biggest misconception? I said, if your AI strategy only includes LLMs and you're not thinking beyond that into what a new form of computing has to do with AI, then you're only focusing on this part of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not thinking broader, just like, you know, when people mobile computing was around the corner, you know, most people weren't even thinking about it. This is that revolutionary. And it's not about the Apple Vision Pro. The Apple Vision Pro is an amazing device, but it's about spatial computing. Any thoughts?
Apple Vision Pro is the it's still like, I'm with you. It's still the first step in into this. I keep reminding people, you didn't have an iPhone 1. Yeah. I know one person who had an iPhone 1 and they were a developer, right? Like you just like, it was less than a year before the 3G came out. And that was the one everyone had. Mm-hmm. The iPad was the exact same way. You didn't have an iPad 1. The first iPad, it launched with, everyone had to get it so they could adapt their apps to a different screen size, right? Different resolution. And then everyone had an iPad 2. That was the one everyone got in line with. So we're seeing the exact same gameplay, and it's a gameplay that works. It's a playbook that absolutely is perfectly written. And you can tell when you go and you compare the marketing that they're doing for the Vision Pro and you compare it to the marketing they did for the original iPhone, and they are in sync. They are point for point the exact same commercial updated for new hardware. So if you're paying attention and you know the lineage and you know your history here, you can see exactly where this is going, which leads me to unfoundedly predict that in less than a year, we will see a new Apple Vision Air Pro 2.
Yeah.
I don't know what they'll call it, right? I do hope that they don't make it out of glass and metal, because that will lighten it up a little bit and help with some of the weight. But other than that, like I would be thrilled to see that $1,600, $1,700, maybe even $1,800 device model come out that makes sense for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't think it will be cheaper ever than like an iPhone Max. Like so we're going to be in that probably $1,500 range, if not $1,800. But, we'll see something change in a year.
Yeah. And I also think the phone is going to get more sophisticated, and you're going to start to close that, you know, to me, it's like, communication device and compute device, eventually it all goes into one single thing, right? Super interesting. Yeah, I love seeing the naysayers. And then I hear a lot of people on LinkedIn like, spatial computing is the new metaverse. I'm like, no, you're not getting it. You're not. This is not about a hype technology. This is literally a new computing platform. Like it's not only hardware. It's not only one thing. Like, I don't know. It's been really interesting to see kind of those types of haters and naysayers. And I'm just holding my breath.
It's strange because even like the metaverse it's not like the metaverse went away. Right? Becoming
it's just the
part
hype
of
away.
Everyday.
The hype went away, so.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The
speculative nature of it. Yeah.
But if you're thinking that like all of a sudden people aren't playing multiplayer games and like living their lives online, like you're out of touch.
You're completely out of touch. I agree.
Like, I don't know what to tell you. So a lot of people are like, oh, this is that. I mean, other than things like, I mean, we obviously have seen like a crypto winter and like NFTs took a major hit. Like, okay, yeah, that was
that. I'll be honest. Like I'm no longer in that game. Like I'm really no longer in that game. I've sold most of my NFTs. I believed it though. Like I really drank the Kool-Aid at some point. I really thought like there's something here. I think there's something with putting things on chain to prove ownership and provenance. I don't know.
I'm disappointed because I was never on the NFT board. You and I got into so many arguments about that. You know,
I've divested myself from all those speculative assets. But yeah, you and I had many conversations. I was like, no, but it's real.
What is real to me, and I do believe this, is the idea of like decentralized networks.
Yes.
And I think that there is a part of the future where that is very deep and very real. That's the part that I'm excited about. That's the part that I'm looking forward to. That's the part I feel like has not actually been leveraged. It kind of like the concept of a decentralized network that can store assets kind of spread all over the universe, really. Digital universe.
Digital, yeah.
that's something that I think is in the future. And just it got hijacked by
crypto bros. My crypto bros, let's be honest.
Yes.
And also, they hijacked the term metaverse because all of a sudden everything was like, I was like, wait, what? I don't know. It was interesting. It was really interesting. Anyway, at Davos, I did see still a big presence of blockchain. I mean, Hedera was there.
There's a lot of blockchain still in Davos. There's a use case for it. It's just not necessarily a bunch of cryptocurrency tokens. The blockchain is boring. It should be boring. It's a background technology. It's a stinking ledger. And when has anyone ever been excited about a ledger, right? It's always confused me that blockchain was like this big thing. And it was only running a hype train because there was a way to shuffle tokenization into making money and monetizing off of that in a very rapid and quick fashion. But the underlying technology, I am excited about.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like the underlying blockchain technology, I think is really important. And I think in the age of AI, it'll be even more important, that Web3 underlying technology architecture.
Absolutely.
So, okay, cool. So yeah, I mean, Apple Vision Pro, bad or future? To me, future, not so much the hardware. It doesn't mean everyone's going to be wearing one of these next year. I just think spatial computing is here to stay. It's about to change human-to-human interaction, human-computer interaction. We're at the beginning, right at the beginning of a new computing platform. Anyone that's building in this space is doing really exciting work.
It's the future because I've learned never to bet against Apple. Mm-hmm. They've not had a failed device since the 90s that I can think of. If they have, they've done a great job of covering it up and wiping everyone's memory. They got those Men in Black flashy things.
Yeah.
It's gone. I don't know. We'll see how their UI and like how it actually functions, like what part of that is fad and future, because I'm a little stuck on how much of it is flat content floating in front of you. Now they seem gung-ho of like they've got an idea here, and until I interact with it, I can't say like it's for me or not. So
I think I'll tell you
that
it's for you. I can't tell you more than that, but
really? Okay.
Yeah,
I think
there's gonna be some fun things you're gonna explore in there.
I like this dynamic of like you know something I don't know, right? That's a fun dynamic for me.
Well, pretty soon. I mean, come February 2nd, maybe you'll go to an Apple store and get a demo. I don't know. I'll tell you, like, it's a very impressive device. It's not for everyone. And like I said, it doesn't mean everyone's going to be wearing one of these things next year. But it's the beginning of something. So, I mean, I'm heading over to Mobile World Congress in February, doing a keynote on spatial computing and the future of wearables. in AI and wearables, kind of where this is going. I think that there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of interest brewing.
Let me ask you this. You know, the Quest 3 has a fair, I mean, they have a broad target audience, target market, but they have a very like honed in purchasing, like active target audience right now. And a lot of it is Gen Z, maybe even Gen Alpha. And it's got a really like favorable price point. They've got a ton of video games. It is definitely a gaming device as opposed to a working device, no matter how badly Meta wants that to be seen differently. Do you think that the Vision Pro can like healthily coexist, or do you think it's going to get competitive?
I think it's going to coexist until Meta doesn't really bring us like the glasses that they've been talking about. Like the CTO Andrew Bosworth actually mentioned that they have a prototype of glasses that he thinks it's the most advanced piece of hardware that we have created as a species. That's quite a thing to say.
That's a statement.
That's a statement. I think they're going to show it somewhere in 2024. You know, it might be just one prototype. I don't know how many they have, right? But I think that once you get to that level, then yes, you start competing. Right now, to me, the Meta Quest does not compete with the Apple Vision Pro because they're very different pieces of hardware. This is different hardware. Like, this is not...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, they don't... In my perspective, they don't compete. They're different things. They're, you know, they use some of the same technologies, but they don't compete. Like, there's no...
I mean, I think that it's healthy to have, like, choice. Mm-hmm. And to see, you know, I'm not necessarily ready to say like, oh, the Oculus Quest is like the Android phone of mobile device, you know, or anything like that. I think it has a very distinct like use case, and want to see that continue to grow alongside Vision Pro, you know. And we have Samsung coming out with their own competitive hardware as well. And I'm excited to see what they come up with, because they normally will push the hardware side of things pretty deep.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you've got a lot of different hardware. Like I said, this is a lot of transitional equipment, a lot of propositions. And, you know, the Meta Quest can coexist with the Apple Vision Pro, with the R1, with the Humane AI Pen. Like, they can all coexist. They're all different versions of this transitional equipment, trying to figure out how to replace computers and phones, right? It's going to take time. It's not going to happen right now. So it's all going to coexist. They're, you know, to me, they're different propositions of different things. But
totally.
And I still love the Meta Quest. So, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think it's a great piece of hardware, really fun, you know, very, very fun. I just think it doesn't really get competitive until later. But eventually, eventually it's going to be, you know, competing.
I think they're going to struggle with like another Quest Pro with the Vision Pro.
No, I don't think that they have the market. Because they, even when they had Oculus for Business, like, that wasn't really their focus. And now they have Meta Quest for Business, I guess. But like, they've never really been super hyper focused on enterprise. So I don't know.
They have a really interesting platform for it. If development could kind of like have some exponential growth behind it, the Quest, Meta Quest for Business platform is pretty neat, in the sense that you can utilize it with a headset, or you can send links and use it on like a desktop and things like that. It's just one of those things that, while I've been impressed with the underlying technology, it's just not been touted.
It hasn't been their focus. Really hasn't been their focus. And I mean, that being said, it's interesting because during this whole conversation when I'm at Davos, a few people that know me there, like, were like, oh, you worked with Magic Leap. Did you hear the news that they just got an investment? I think it's another $500 million from Saudi Arabia, I think from PIF. I'm not sure who was the funding from. But it's interesting because that no one's talking about Magic Leap per se. And, you know, I'm like, it's sad. It's such a great, like, the Magic Leap 2, great piece of hardware. Amazing. Like, for me, they were the original, there were some of the original, like, one of the original spatial computing pioneers. And they moved away from the words spatial computing. They're using AR. And I'm like, this is more than interactive augmented reality. Like, I wish they would have stuck with the word spatial computing, not thought that, you know, they couldn't use it because Apple was using it. They should have been like, we have been doing this since 2017, 2016 or whatever, right?
As far as I know, there's not like a trademark on spatial computing by Apple. They just decided to use
anyone. Yeah. Even Meta, I mean, Bosworth and Zuckerberg have used the term spatial computing. It's a computing term, right? It was interesting because a few people were like, oh, did you see the Magic Leap news? I'm like, oh, what happened? You know, congratulations to Magic Leap for, you know, raising some more cash and stuff. I mean, I still know people that work there. There's some really amazing professionals that work there still. So you know, that is one company that, you know, I will always miss that job. That's one job I will always miss. I loved yeah. working there when I was there. But granted, it was a different Magic Leap than it is right now. So,
well, I think, you know, if we can keep pushing all of these things forward, I'm hoping for a what's that saying? All tides rise, yeah. all ships, or something like that. You know, like there's a future out there if you can make a product that does a thing that people absolutely need as a solution. And if it doesn't fall into that solution category, okay, well, maybe some pieces will get eaten up into other areas. But I do think that there is a space needed for the non-pass-through version of AR, right? Because right now, as you look at the Quest 3 and as you look at the Vision Pro, you're still looking through cameras to your surrounding areas as opposed to a one-to-one. I can't imagine certain like manufacturing and construction areas just being able to rely on that pass-through from a camera. Although I'm sure it's incredibly impressive on the Vision Pro.
There's still a question of peripheral vision, which I remember we talk a lot of Magic Leap, like when you're doing something in enterprise, when you're on the manufacturing floor, like you need to make sure you have access to your peripheral vision, right? Yeah. So if you have a full-on, fully immersive situation, like that peripheral vision goes out, you know, there's
no... Well, look, in any device, any device that relies on cameras for your pass-through, if it, for whatever reason, crashes, you're going to be blindfolded. The screen will turn off and you will be in the dark, mm-hmm. right? Whereas, you know, and that might not be a safety concern for a lot of like practical applications for AR when it's used inside of a more careful, you know, environment. And situations like anything like the mm-hmm. the Magic Leap or even I think there's some other stuff coming up from Samsung that's going to be kind of like that as well, where you have a direct pass through. I would rather be wearing that if I'm mm-hmm. in an environment that needs fast response, because if something goes wrong and that system turns off, I don't want to be blindfolded. I need to be able to see everything in my surroundings, but it's a very specific use case. Mm-hmm. Those use cases do make money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you already have, like, I am based in DC, so I live, you know, relatively close to a place called Fort Belvoir, where they have all the IVAS, the Microsoft Mixed Reality HoloLens project with the Army and stuff, and they do a lot of the work there on that. You know, and as much as everyone keeps saying this has died, it hasn't. They're still working on it. They're still thinking about, you know, how this works for soldiers, et cetera, et cetera. So that continues. And talking about that a little bit, I'll tell you this. So Alex Kipman, who used to be at Mixed Reality at Microsoft, and there was some controversies there, I have to say. But he has announced at Davos the launch of a company called Analog, which is an edge computing AI company that talks about understanding people, places, and things. So I still need to dig a little bit deeper into what Alex is doing. But I think we're going to start to see a lot of different propositions that of people that understand the technology and understand how AI and mixed reality kind of merge together into this new form of computing. So. Really interesting conversations and things that I'm seeing from Davos that I think, you know, I wonder what Davos is going to look like next year. So, you know, I have a feeling that spatial computing is going to be not the main topic. I don't think we're there yet, but it's going to be a little bit more interesting for the Davos crowd. All right, we're going to go on break. And when we get back, we'll continue talking about some of the news that are happening in tech and our dispatch from the fringe. So let's go on break.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. Now that we're back, let's go into some more news. related to gaming. So it looks like the most popular, the best-selling game of last year was not Call of Duty. And it wasn't any type of like Rock Band game. It was actually Hogwarts Legacy, right? That's the name of the game? I've never played it. I've never played it, but I know it's huge with certain people. Some people are obsessed with it. Yeah, have you played it? Like, what are your thoughts?
I haven't. My wife has. We played it a little bit on the Switch. So typically, if I'm not playing a game like on a PC, I mean, I've got an Xbox, but for some reason, I actually don't use it that much. We play a lot of Switch games, mostly. And so what happened was it originally came out for PC, then came out for consoles, and then it was forever. And then it released for the Nintendo Switch. Because, I mean, really, it's a huge game. It's an open world of Hogwarts, and it's got these amazing graphics, and it's kind of like you live in Hogwarts. Then they decided they were going to make this ridiculous goal of launching it on the Nintendo Switch, which is still an underpowered tablet from 2017, right? Like, it is just...
But that might change this year.
That may change. That's a different conversation. I've heard the same whispers as a different episode. And like in perfect Nintendo fashion, they are tight-lipped with just kind of like head nods of like, yeah, that's an interesting thing that you've just said. I'm not saying anything. You just never know, because we all thought we were getting an updated Switch, and then the Switch OLED came out, and all they did was update the screen, and we're just kind of like scratching our heads of like, we don't need like a new console. We just need something that's not an... The Nintendo Switch was underpowered when it came out in 2017. So really, we're looking at like a 2014, 2015 level tablet that it, and all of a sudden we've got to like port these massive games like Hogwarts Legacy. The one I was really impressed with was No Man's Sky. The fact that they even got that game working on the Nintendo Switch was absolutely bonkers. But Hogwarts Legacy had an interesting rollout, and I think that really led to its massive sale, right? Mm-hmm. So it is one of those things, like Harry Potter fans are their own beast, right? Like they're a huge group of people. I'm married to one. I didn't grow up really in the Harry Potter. I was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles kid, so I didn't know anything about Harry Potter. Like that just wasn't my thing. I know way too much about it now. And so it was one of those things where I kind of I've adopted into it. You marry into the Harry Potter.
Are you Ravenclaw? You're giving me Ravenclaw vibes.
Okay, no, I'm
Slytherin.
Not, no.
Like, I took the
I'm
test.
Slytherin too.
Oh, okay.
My wife's Ravenclaw. I'm definitely Slytherin.
Whenever I tell people that, Ravenclaws and Hufflepuffs at home. But I'm Slytherin all the way. My youngest daughter and myself were Slytherin. So yeah.
And like when I tell people that, they're like, oh yeah, that checks. Like people who really spend like a lot of time, they're like, okay, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah,
like, what does that even mean? What is that? I don't know what this. Okay, fine.
Anyone sure, that's listening to this and is a Potterhead, like they'll get it, like they'll understand.
But it did. It sold 22 million copies last year.
That's amazing.
It sold 22 million. Now, a big part of that is the fact that like it actually is now available on just about any console you can think of, right? So it's not one of these gated properties that takes a chunk of the market out of the equation. So if you have it on PC, you can play it on PC, you can play it on Xbox, you can play it on whatever. Mm-hmm. Now you can play it on Nintendo Switch. You can almost play it on a cereal box, right? Like it's one of those things where it's available everywhere. And there's just enough of a group of fans that really want it. And it is an impressive game. Technologically speaking, it is incredibly impressive. If you're a Harry Potter fan, it's kind of like, well, this is the game you are looking for, because now you can run around Hogwarts and you're a wizard.
Awesome. So speaking about other news in gaming, you've got Minecraft partnering with the BBC Studios.
Which I didn't know. This is the second time they've done this.
They don't do this very often. Like Minecraft,
I didn't know they had ever done it. This was news to me.
Doesn't partner easily. Like, yeah, I've tried. Trust me, I've tried with a lot of the companies and brands I've worked with. Not easy.
But it's their Planet Earth experience. They're kind of like bringing that documentary that everyone loves so much into Minecraft to be an educational experience for the players. And it's just such a perfect combo to meet a new generation where they are, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes a whole lot of sense. I love seeing an organization like the BBC do this, because what it tells me is they understand, as a broadcast company, how to broadcast. And it's not necessarily television. And this is what I wish more broadcast teams could get behind. This very linear idea of, like, we shoot content, we deliver content in this format. You got to get that crap out of your head. That doesn't work like that anymore. And it's really interesting to see the BBC to go to Minecraft and treat it like a broadcast device.
Yeah. I mean, brilliant move. I think we're going to see more. Yeah. I think the people, the executives that get it are starting to understand this is, this is another way to communicate. It's communicating with a very big audience, right?
Yeah.
I said that at DLD. I literally said gaming is everywhere and for everyone. That's like from the CES keynote that they had in the trends. If you're not paying attention to gaming, like, you don't understand the massive amount of people that are gamers. And the amount, I mean, it's what, 8 times bigger than Hollywood or something? It's bigger than Hollywood and music combined. Why aren't we giving gaming the respect it deserves? Baffles me. Like, I want to see more gaming content. I want to see more gaming conversations at Davos. I want to see more of that. Like, I don't know.
If you compare, and I'm Davos is an impressive, this isn't a dig at Davos. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me be clear.
But it's not the crowd. If I were to ask that audience, who here is are gamers, it's probably going to be 4 cats, raising
this,
their hands.
This time. But as the guard changes, that will change. Right. And like, that's just the natural progression of things. But if you want to look at where, a location where ideas get exchanged and where there's a lot of potential money, if you even take what happens at Davos and compare it to something like Comic-Con, mm-hmm. Comic-Con stomps Davos.
Oh yeah.
It is a bigger platform. And that's not to dilute the value of Davos at all. It's just saying it is an apples to oranges thing, and it is a massive market, and there's a ton of people who are not only investing in it, but investing their time, their own mm-hmm. interests, and their own businesses. Anyone who's not giving it credit, they're on the way out.
Yeah. They don't understand how things are happening now. And now I can't really get into details, but I will share this. Basically, there were rumors that a very famous YouTuber was going to show up at Davos. And I was really excited. I was really hoping that they were going to show up. I mean, I would have been the coolest mom if they would have shown up, because I was at an event that they would have been at. And later on, I found out that actually the police, the local police, actually told them not to come, because from a security standpoint, even though that's a super secure area, there's snipers, when you're in there, super secure area, because all the heads of state, all these important politicians, all important government, CEOs, this could not be safer, right? Yeah. But they actually asked them not to come because they couldn't control that level of attention or that massive crowds that tend to follow this person, right? That is beyond their capability, because he literally would have been the most famous person in the world that would have been there. So I think that says a lot about, things are changing mm-hmm. and shifting as to who is considered a force to be reckoned with within a world perspective, a global stage. So that to me was enlightening. I was like, wow.
Well, what was the conference? I was at a YouTube style. What was that conference?
Didn't you go to VidCon?
I went to VidCon. That's VidCon? The one I was thinking of. Yeah.
You were in the hotel with all the TikTokers?
Yeah. I did not belong there. I had no idea what was going on, but I will say VidCon was the only conference I had been to where I had a moment where I was actually afraid for my life. And I'm not exaggerating.
Are you serious? You didn't tell me this.
No, I don't think I did tell you this.
I asked you to go because I couldn't go. And I was like, Lee, can you take over this panel?
There was a moment where I was at VidCon. I was inside. This was in Anaheim at their conference center. I was on the second floor. And so I had a couple of escalators that went down to the main floor. I was higher up than that. You can get quite a few floors up and still see the main floor. And I'm walking through, and then I heard blood curdling screams, just like pandemonium. And I honestly thought there was an attack or an event or something. Cause it didn't sound joyous. It did not sound
oh my gosh.
Pleasant. It was, my heart sank. I lost my blood pressure and I thought, where's the nearest exit? I need to get out of here. And then all of a sudden security came. I didn't realize how much security was in this building, They like crawled out of the vents like it was Die Hard. Like they were just everywhere all at once. And so I'm with one of our coworkers who's younger than I am, and she's looking over the edge and she's starting to freak out. So I get nervous. And then she looks at me. She's like, what's wrong with you? You look white as a ghost. I'm like, what is happening? Where's the exit? Do I need to get out of here? And she goes, no, Mr. Beast just showed up. I had no earthly idea. Like, I knew Mr. Beast was big. Like, that's fine. When I say this place went insane, I was scared to death. It was beyond Beatlemania, right? You see all of the old black and white footage of Beatlemania and like people in the crowds and they're just crying and blah, 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 blah. I could deal with that. I've seen that. You see all of the fandom around Taylor Swift showing up to a Chiefs game or whatever. I can deal with all of that. When I tell you this place went to the ground, I'd never seen anything bigger than Mr. Beast walking into the VidCon conference center. And that's when it hit. Is like, this is definitely the future of fandom to a level that made me feel old because I couldn't understand it.
Old and scared. Old and scared. I love it. Well, we're going to send you back to VidCon. Oh, God. We're going to put you up in the Marriott again where all the TikTokers are and like there's no selfies allowed and. Yeah, that's like a whole
I did
other.
Like that. I liked that. I you liked being that? In that hotel because there was no one who was allowed to take photos. So like that was kind of really nice and refreshing. It's like no one had their phone out taking like pictures and stuff. So
because that's where I go, like that's where I stay. So like, I was like, here you go, Lee. Here's the hotel. All right. Another gaming news. So Vegas, Las Vegas, by the way, where the Super Bowl is going to happen soon. And I will do a side note here. I'm a huge Usher fan. Huge. I mean, I love Usher because I'm from Atlanta. Yeah. Like Atlanta's home. Usher's part of like A-Town. Like, like the ATL. We love Usher. Well, at least I do, right? So I'm like super pumped about the Super Bowl halftime show. I'm like, I can't wait to see Lil Jon and Ludacris and like, you know, all the Atlanta people. So I'm super pumped. I'm playing a lot of Usher at the house, the clean version.
It's going to be 2006 all over again. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm like super into it and everything. And then my daughter, my 13-year-old Jen Alpha daughter, says, you know what, Mom? We were talking about the halftime show and my friends and I and like everyone in the class just don't think Usher's famous. We actually wish someone else was doing the halftime show. And it's like only the old people are excited. And I'm like, oh my gosh, honey. I was like, well, us, the old people have the money to go to the Super Bowl and we're excited about Usher.
That's a good point, right? Like what is the core demographic of person who's supposed to watch the Super Bowl? I do think the NFL might have a problem here because I don't see a lot of younger people being that interested in, you know, football or even like televised sports for that matter. Except for in the rare instance in which, you know, Taylor Swift said Chiefs game, in which case they're all about it.
They're all about it because it's Taylor. but yeah, like I was like, oh my, like literally like, I was like, oh my gosh, my excitement. I'm so excited about Usher. And she's like, yeah, I don't know, Mom. We don't think he's famous. That you old people are excited about it. And then my son, I was like, so what do you think about Usher doing the halftime show? He's like, I don't know. My friends and I think we wish it was kind of Eminem, but didn't he just do that in LA or something? I was like, yeah, honey. I mean, I was part of the LA show. So yeah, it was really interesting.
And what's crazy about that is Eminem has somehow stayed with relevance and they are from the same generation of music, right?
Like, but he's in
Eminem
Fortnite. He's in all these sorts of things and they're all singing, you know, all the songs. Like they literally
And that's the difference. When was the last time that you saw like Usher do something in Fortnite or Usher do something inside of Roblox, right? Like that, there's a reason that these groups do this, especially when they're on that cusp of needing the second generations of fans.
Yeah.
And that's when it hits, right? And I think that's a big part of how like Elton John has stayed relevant, right? True. Elton John did stuff in Roblox and for a guy who's
and he's partnered with Dua Lipa. Like the songs, he's remixed them with Dua Lipa.
He's
and
never
Britney
been
Spears
afraid,
and,
right? Yeah. He's never been afraid of reaching out to the next generation wherever that they are, right? And that's what it kind of takes in this industry.
Yeah. So I'm eager to see what happens with Usher, but I love Usher. So yeah, and I won't get into it, but then my youngest daughter also this weekend tells me she loves pickleball.
She's the
like,
game?
She loves pickleball. Like she loves
pickleball. Just like
they're playing it at school.
Well, lead us to the conversation of Atari, who created Pong, which is really just pickleball, if you think about it.
It's a very primitive version of pickleball. Well, yes. And what is the news? Share the news because it's a really fun, exciting news.
There's this conversation about an Atari-themed casino resort in Las Vegas. Okay, so here's the thing. Anyone who really knows me knows I'm a massive Atari fan. I'm an Atari collector. I'm in that weird group of people who still has a working Atari. I've got like multiple working Ataris. I really do like those games. Back in 2017, I did a TED Talk about virtual reality and kind of coined this conversation of back then making your games with the Atari approach, meaning making them as simple to play as possible because you have a generation of people who you're blindfolding people and giving them multiple button controllers. And if you want to do enterprise virtual reality, you need to be able to give it to somebody who it's as simple to use as a joystick and a single button. That was my entire formula for the success that I had in enterprise VR. When I see an Atari-themed casino and resort in Las Vegas, I get super excited. And now Atari's, for those who are not paying attention, Atari's actually been making a lot of moves in the last 2 or 3 years. They've had new hardware out. They've put out new video game consoles. They've actually bought a couple of companies, one of them being one of my favorite companies called Atari Age that still puts out original Atari cartridge games by people who like home code new games and stuff like that. So it is definitely an underground group thing, but it's global, right? It's this underground culture. But Atari owns a lot of intellectual property, and it has passed through many hands. Atari got sold to CBS, then CBS decided that they weren't going to go forward with it, and they sold it to the next guy and to the next guy. At one point, it went to a company in France who tried to do a token called Pong or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that. I did something with their CEO once.
I believed it changed hands one more time, and the people who have it now really believe in the brand as a gaming brand. And they do own a lot of actual intellectual property. Like they own the IP behind games like Breakout. Fun fact, Breakout was originally programmed by Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was the writer for Breakout for the Atari 2600. Secretly, it was actually programmed by Steve Wozniak, who was let in the back door by Steve Jobs because Steve Jobs didn't know how to program.
How did Steve Jobs do this?
Steve Jobs got the job as the developer for Breakout with Atari, and they never hired Steve Wozniak. They didn't know he was there.
He's the one that doing all the work. He's the one who actually
did all of the work. So there's just that's your OG
strategery
trivia for you. But like Missile Command and Adventure, they own a lot of these things that brand still owns. So I think it's a kind of a nice little reach out. Atari is a Gen X brand for sure. Maybe a little bit of millennial. I'm a millennial, and I've got I had hand-me-down consoles and stuff like that. So when I see stuff like this, it's a nice push of like bringing video games into Las Vegas, which in my personal opinion has been struggling with bringing in a younger audience. I think this is a nice nod in that direction. This is actually a type of idea of a hotel that I would actually go to I'd want to go to. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And like, I see with my kids, like for example, my son for his birthday wants the Atari Lego set.
Cool set.
He did the NES one. So he's got the Nintendo one, and he saw that and he's like, Mom, I really want this one. Cause he had talked to his dad about Atari and stuff. So from a nostalgic perspective, from an IP perspective, from a gaming perspective, could be really cool if that hotel actually happens. I could see people like a certain generation flocking to it, and if they can bring it back or like extend their IP further, like It just feels like everything, like, you know, like with Five Nights at Freddy's, for example, which is indie game, right? They did amazing this year with the movie, like the second FNAF is being produced. Like, yeah. I feel like all this gaming IP is just taking over the world. And Atari has some really cool things that they could extend their IP into, for sure.
They definitely do. It'll be interesting to see what they pull off with this. I mean, it's speculative right now. Yeah. It's just a plan. We'll see as it, you know, progresses. But I think that there's a there.
And, I would definitely
there's something. There's something that at least even attracts me. And I'm not the biggest Las Vegas fan.
Yeah.
So if you can get me interested in it, I think you have a good idea. Like, that's just.
All right. So gaming themed hotels, future or fad?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say future, but that's because I think casino hotels in general are video games.
Good point. That's a good point. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people don't even realize, like, a lot of those slot machines, a lot of those touch video games that are casino games now in your standard casino are just written in Unity. And they're networked together and that's how it works. So every time, you know, I see someone older who's, you kids just play video games, but they go to the casino every day. I'm like, you're playing in the same engine. You're just playing a different game. This is
your gaming. It's just a different type of gaming, but yes. Okay. Awesome. So now moving on to another, our last set of news. And we talked about this briefly about some of the closures, some of the layoffs. Friday night I read that the store number 8 team, it's an incubation venture that Walmart had is closing down store number 8. And, you know, I have to say I am personally very thankful to the people at store number 8 that believed in me and brought me in as their metaverse advisor in residence. I mean, that team really changed my life in some ways because that's how my company really took off. So, you know, I'm really sad to hear that they're closing this part of Walmart. Amazing team, amazing folks that have worked there. And I just want to wish that whole team, you know, a lot of success. They're brilliant minds. I'm sure they're going to find great roles. But yeah, very sad to hear that news.
It's,
I don't know.
It's strange to see it. Whenever you hear of a large company and like seeing like an innovation team get cut, you just kind of have to scratch your head of like, well, what's the long game here? Right. Because it's not as if, internal innovation goes away. Cause that's a nail in the coffin if that's what you do. Right. Like you just can't allow for that type of research and development to just go to the wayside. Where would Walmart be without the self-checkout lines, without touchscreen innovations, without, you know, proper security updates, blah, 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 blah. There's a ton of things out there.
Yeah.
And even what they're doing with like walmart.com and their own web presence is brilliant. There's a lot of really smart stuff going on there. And they've even got this partnership now with Unity where they're bringing in their 3D assets to have like an actual active storefront within video games, which is something that I'm a big proponent and fan of. I guess that's the question of like, we'll have to wait and see, but I can't fathom them just not having an R&D sector.
What I read in the press release, right, what is said publicly is basically that they're that those functions were already incorporated into the corporate side of Walmart, right? But yeah, like I just, you know, for me, like personally, I had such a great experience. Store number 8 really changed the trajectory of my company. Which I then, you know, sold to Journey. So I just wish everyone there, I hope that they're okay. And I hope that they get amazing roles. They're amazing people. So just, you know, want to say that about them. And I think that's it. I think we're going to pick up guest interviews, expert interviews in February again. Right now we're kind of a little slow on the start because I've been traveling and, you know, seems like a lot of people have been traveling too. So it's been hard to get interviews scheduled. everyone's just getting back on track or traveling or, you know, or maybe in a Airbnb without Wi-Fi. Now we can go to Lily from Dispatch, our producer, who's going to do Dispatch from the Fringe, and we'll see what she brings us this week. So Lily.
Hello, Kathy and Lee. Welcome to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe. This week, I'm bringing you a story about a tool that can poison artificial intelligence. It's called Nightshade, and it's from the University of Chicago. A team there created this program that addresses what they call power asymmetry in AI. So what Nightshade does is it transforms images into poison samples so that models training on them without consent will see their models learn unpredictable behaviors that deviate from expected norms. For instance, if you have a prompt that asks for a Pegasus, a horse with flying wings, flying over the moon, instead you might get an image of an old beater car stuck in a big mud puddle. So used responsibly, this is from the Nightshade website, Nightshade can help deter model trainers who disregard copyrights, opt-out lists, and do not scrape /robots.txt directives. And the team has also created another tool called Glaze, which is a defensive tool that individual artists can use to protect themselves against style mimicry attacks. So there's Nightshade and Glaze, and these are two new tools to help artists and people protect their work online from being used for training AI without consent. And I thought this was a great story to share since last week Lee and I touched on what is art, what does generative AI make. Lee mentioned that he thinks generative AI creates content and images and that we shouldn't really be using AI to create things that humans are good at, like art and imagery and poetry. And so I agree with him there. And I thought this was a cool story and the battle over AI and what we're able to create versus what humans should do and the rights that we have of our art and content online. That's this week's Dispatch from the Fringe.
All right, Lily, that was really interesting. Lee, what do you think? I'm just getting my bearings again here. Like, I'm like, what?
Yeah, this is an interesting concept. This idea of software that can kind of like fight against AI and protect art, and protect people who want to protect their work. We'll see.
We'll see, right?
It feels a little snow crashy to me. We'll see.
A little snow crashy sprinkled in. I like it. Oh my gosh. But yeah, we'll have to see what happens. But yeah, thank you, Lily, for always finding the strangest things out there. But this is good. All right. So any big plans for next week?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, but none that I can talk about.
There you go. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll talk offline.
No, I mean, I can a little bit. I'm as we've alluded to before, and I can say more about it now, but we'll talk about it later as well. Last year, I wrote a novel that I wrapped up a couple of back in November,
yeah.
And I'm like trudging through the process of the second draft. So that's eating up my month, any of my downtime. So yeah, that's kind of like.
That's exciting, though.
That's super
excited. I can't wait for everyone to kind of actually eventually get in, have it in their hands. It's a great piece. So
it's wrapped up to be kind of a very exciting sci-fi, and I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. Well, once it becomes a TV show, I would love to produce.
You got it. I'm just trying to find a publisher right now.
Oh no, You're out here making it a TV show. Like Murderbot Diary situation. Like this is where it's going. Okay, Lee. Like seriously. So anyway, I'm excited. I'm staying in DC for a couple of days. Actually going to the Booz Allen Hamilton Space and AI Innovation event this week. So very excited about that because, you know, I love space. It's like one of those industries that I keep my eyes on that I know I'm going to do things in the future. And so yeah, going to that and just working on some transitions on the professional side and exciting. I'm going to say this. February will be a very exciting month. I'm really looking forward to February.
I'm too.
So it'll be fun. But yeah, thanks for everyone for listening to Tech Magic. We hope you're enjoying the show. Feel free to subscribe, leave us a review, and want to thank all the listeners, all the sponsors, and Adweek as well for having our podcast on the Adweek Podcast Network. Hope to see you all again next week, and let us know if there's any stories you want us to cover or talk about, and we'll kind of, bring the tech and the magic to you. All right, see you next week.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch, because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content, so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.